According to our next guest, autonomous technologies, runaway markets, and weaponized media have overturned civil society, paralyzing our ability to connect meaningfully or act purposefully. Everyone is asking how we got here, as if there was a random slide toward collective incoherence and dispowerment. It is not, says Douglas Rushkoff. There's a reason for our current predicament, an anti-human agenda, he says, embedded in our technology, our markets, and our major cultural institutions, from education and religion to civics and media. It has turned them from forces for human connection and expression into ones of isolation and repression. Rushkoff says it doesn't have to be this way. His new book is Team Human, and he argues that we are capable of not only transcending the paralyzing effects of these institutions, but reconnecting with one another. Named one of the world's 10 most influential intellectuals by MIT, Douglas Rushkoff is an award-winning author, broadcaster, and documentarian who studies human autonomy in the digital age. Again, the name of the book is Team Human, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Douglas, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So what got you thinking about this idea of Team Human?
I mean, honestly, what really pushed me in this direction was I was on a panel with someone called a transhumanist. It was one of these guys who believes that computers are about to get smarter than human beings are. And once they do, we should just pass the evolutionary torch to silicon and fade into the background, you know, upload consciousness to the chip and accept our imminent extinction. And I made this heartfelt case for humans, saying, no, human beings are special. We have something unique about us. We're weird. We're quirky. We can embrace ambiguity. We at least deserve a place in the digital future. And he said, oh, Rushkoff, you're just saying that because you're a human. As if it was some kind of hubris for me to want there to be a role for humans. And that's when I said, all right, fine. I'm guilty as charged. I'm a human. I'm on Team Human. And I ended up spending really the next 10 years, I wrote two books in the meantime, but 10 years thinking about, why is it that I care about humans? Why should humans have a role? You know, we destroyed the environment. We're doing bad things. Would the world be better without us? And I decided I really wanted to make an impassioned case for, you know, why humans matter and how all of these things that we develop in order to connect with one another, how and why they tend to kind of turn against those original purposes.
So on that note, this is somewhat of an obtuse question. However, it seems to me that the argument the other way is the one that ought to be made rather than you having to fight for humans, right? I mean, what changed to make that our reality?
Interesting. I mean, partly, you know, there's a lot of ways you could analyze it. I mean, some people, you know, Marxists would say that this is just capitalism. This is what capitalism does, that in order to separate workers from each other and exploit them, in order to turn people into individual, alienated, isolated consumers, you know, market divided us all from each other and started to look at people really in terms of their utility value rather than their essential or spiritual or real or social value. So we're valuable in what the work we can get done, our productivity, the cash we can provide, or these days the data that we can provide to a Facebook or a Google. And once you start looking at people like that, as our technologists do and our leading companies do, you start to look at human beings as a problem and technology is the solution. You know, how are we going to make people do this? How are we going to make them do that? And we've ended up living on these platforms, whether it's Facebook or Google or Twitter, that are really, these are platforms that are operating us more than we're operating them. You know, your smartphone is doing a whole lot more to you these days than you're doing to your smartphone. It's getting smarter about you with every interaction you have, and we're kind of getting dumber about it.
When you talk about Team Human and you have these, you look at our human connection and expression and ultimately are presenting these ideas to us, And it seems as though it is quite, well, it comes off like a manifesto, right? I assume that's what you wanted.
Yeah, it is. It's meant to say, you know, come on, find the others, fight with me for a place. Let's retrieve the essential human values before we forget what they are. Yeah, and let's embed them in this digital future rather than just letting the market or a few technologists or some angry people define the way we're going to interact with each other in the future.
So in looking at this treatise, it's 100 passages detailing the history of our relationship with language and media and money and politics and technology and religion, and looking at our union with these things. I assume that those come to you quite readily as to what it is that makes us human and what we need to stay human.
Yeah, I mean, and I think finally what it comes down to is that, you know, being human is a team sport. You know, we've bought the idea that evolution is some kind of battle for survival, this competitive battle between individuals. And that's not even what Darwin wrote about. Evolution really is the story of how various species collaborate and coordinate in order to prosper, in order to thrive. If human beings are the most advanced species, it's really just because we have the most advanced means of collaborating. And once you see it that way, you realize that in order to have strength or even social health or basic cognitive functioning, we need other people. We need to be able to connect to them. But when you look at the tools that we're using, they seem really devised to disconnect us from one another. You know, Twitter does not bring America together. You know, it's, if anything, it's doing the exact opposite. You know, that these are platforms that are teaching us how to see other people as adversaries, as others, rather than teaching us to see other people as friends.
So in bringing humans together, we can use the technology, we can use what is around us to help bring us together.
Yeah, I mean, any of these things can bring us together. It's funny, you know, I like to think of technologies like drugs, you know, that once you're on Twitter or on Facebook or on Gmail, it's like being on a drug. It changes the way you think and interact. And if you're conscious of that, saying, okay, when I'm on texting, I get short with people. I mean, because I have to be, I'm typing with my thumbs. But if you realize I'm being short with people, when you're short with people, you also kind of bark commands at them. You also kind of get mad easily. You also kind of get confused about what they mean. So if you realize, okay, I'm going into the text world now, and I'm gonna be affected by that, you end up at least aware of the compromises of one medium or another, rather than just, you know, assuming that's the way things are. You know, especially these now everybody's FaceTiming and Skyping with each other, and you see the video of a person, but no matter how good your video is, you can't really establish rapport. You can't see if their eyes are getting wider or smaller, if their face is flushing or turning pale. You can't see the micro motions of their head. So you don't really connect on an organic, kind of biological, emotional level. And even if that person has said, I agree with you, I agree, your body doesn't hear it. And when you disconnect, you wonder, did that person really mean it? We tend to distrust the other person before we recall that, oh, it's the technology didn't let my body hear them. The technology didn't let my mirror neurons fire, and the oxytocin didn't go through my bloodstream. So it felt empty. It's sort of like socializing online is a bit like eating, you know, junk food. It can go in, but it never really fills you up in that satisfying way.
You write late in the book, human beings can intervene in the machine. That's not a refusal to accept progress. It's simply a refusal to accept any particular outcome as inevitable. And like many things in the book, a lot of it rests on our shoulders, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, sorry to say, but yeah, we are responsible for our future. I see a lot of corporations spending a whole lot of money. I get these emails all the time. They think I'm a futurist because I guess I've been right about a bunch of future things, and they want to hire me to tell them what the future is going to be. basically so they can bet on it, you know, buy the right stock and bet on the future. But they see the future as a fait accompli, as something that's going to happen no matter what they do. And what I'm trying to argue is that the future is not a fixed thing in the future. The future is a verb. The future is something that we create right now together. And that rather than these companies and billionaires spending all this money trying to figure out how to insulate themselves from the future that they're afraid of, what about spending their time and energy and money making the future something that they want to go to? You know, and that shouldn't be rocket science.
So often when you have teams, they are going against one another and there is ultimately a winner. So in this case of team human, in the broadest sense possible, how do we win?
I mean, I think the way we win is by finding the others and creating a happy, thriving place for humans in the future. I mean, there really is no team anti-human as such, but there's a lot of things that we're building. There's a lot of technologies and systems that are not really good for people. Certain aspects of capitalism that want to exploit workers, certain aspects of consumerism that want us to buy stuff, even if it's not good for us. You know, you can't look at whatever the energy pushing a cigarette company to, you know, addict people to nicotine, you can't see that as a pro-human urge. Even, you know, national boundaries to some extent, they make it really easy to see people on the other side of the boundary as somehow on another team, and they're not. They're on our team. They're humans. They have feelings too, no matter the darkness or lightness of their skin. So what I see is the anti-human forces are really the ones that prevent us from connecting with one another, the ones that really lead us to see other people as from some other team rather than our one big collective team.
Douglas Rushkoff's new book is Team Human. The book is published by Norton. Douglas, a great pleasure as always. Thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you very much, and to you. Again, the name of the book is Team Human. It is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.